Waynesburg to Hollidaysburg, Uniontown to Westchester, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, gas taxes in Pennsylvania have gone up by over 30 cents per gallon in recent years. Now a multi-state agreement to fund questionable environmental projects could push that tax rate even higher. Greg Wrightstone, author of Inconvenient Facts, is here with details. Turnpike toll hikes, a change in the state employees' pension system, and a budget battle will get the new year off to a fast start. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And liberal Democrats claimed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act would hurt the U.S. economy. A year later, they have been proven wrong. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Greg Wrightstone in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. The 2019-2020 session of the Pennsylvania General Assembly got underway this past week as lawmakers were sworn into office for the new term. An unusually high 50-plus freshmen took office. That turnover generated by more retirements than usual and a Democrat wave that crashed over suburban Philadelphia counties, ousting a dozen Republican lawmakers. But the GOP retains solid control of both chambers of the legislature. That being the case, Mike Terzai of Allegheny County was reelected Speaker of the House of Representatives, and Joe Scarnati of Jefferson County returns as President Pro Tem of the State Senate. One major leadership change came in the House, where Brian Cutler of Lancaster County became Majority Leader, replacing former State Representative Dave Reed, who retired. And as Governor Tom Wolf prepares for his second term, there have been several changes in his cabinet. Robert Torres, who has served as the acting Secretary of State for the past year or so, will be nominated by the governor to be the new Secretary of Aging. Teresa Osborne, who currently holds that position, will be named to the Civil Service Commission. The new Secretary of the Department of State, which among other duties oversees the state's election process, will be Kathy Buchvar, who already works as an elections advisor to the department. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. It is known as the Transportation and Climate Initiative, a plan by radical environmentalists to add to the state's already highest in the nation gasoline taxes to fund public transportation and other so-called low-carbon technologies. Greg Wrightstone is here to talk about this latest government money grab. Greg is author of the book Inconvenient Facts, The Science Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. Greg, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Greg, a number of states came together toward the end of this past year in an effort to what they refer to as cut back on carbon emissions and actually sort of redefine or redirect where resources are going. So give us the overview as to what these nine states got together to do.
Yeah, there were nine mostly northeast and eastern states, everywhere from Vermont down to Virginia, Pennsylvania being one of them, that have signed on to what's called the Transportation and Climate Initiative Statement that was released December 18th. And what it does is aims to cap each of the state's carbon emissions from transportation. This deals specifically with transportation. To cap them, we have 1 year to come up, we being the states. I have 1 year to come up with a plan, and after that, the states have the option to opt in or opt out to that plan. But basically, it looks like it'll be a tax on gasoline, diesel, any of the transportation fuels, and then that money will be redistributed at the states, or whatever the states decide to do with that, but it would be targeted for low-carbon transportation systems. So I think the easy way to look at this, it would be taxing the residents of Perry County to pay for the residents of Philadelphia's enhanced bus system, things like that. It'll be a disincentive for the citizens. It'll be painful for the citizens through higher energy costs, transportation, gasoline costs. It'll be a disincentive for companies to come here to Pennsylvania for any of these states that sign on to it. Interestingly, Ohio did not sign on to this. they would then have a competitive advantage over any businesses using transportation fuels. You would want to set up your company just across the state line in Ohio rather than in Pennsylvania.
Let's dive a little deeper, Greg, into this whole issue of how this is going to be paid for. We can talk also down the road here as to why we'd even want to get involved in this, but you talk about higher taxes on fuel. Now, if I'm Joe Ordinary Citizen, I drive my car back and forth to work, maybe to visit family, whatever, and I'm already paying the highest gasoline tax in the country thanks to the 30-cent a gallon increase that was imposed by, shall we say, a Republican administration a few years ago. Is this going to mean additional taxes on top of those additional taxes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty sure thing. What's not clear is how it would be imposed or how much. This will all be worked out in the next year. But it will be a tax of some type. But yeah, the revenue enhancement and the revenue that will be taken and redistributed will be coming from the citizens, from my 90-year-old grandfather when we go to pick him up. And it's just going to be hard for the citizens on top of, like you said, that 30-cent gas tax. It'll make us even more non-competitive than other neighboring states. I'm a huge proponent of the benefits of carbon dioxide. I see tremendous global benefits of carbon dioxide. I'm just actually completing a video concerning the greening of the earth. And we see that there's been a huge global increase in vegetation over the last 30 to 40 years because of carbon dioxide fertilization. But yet they call this carbon pollution. Really, this proposal is a solution in search of a problem. Carbon is not pollution, carbon dioxide, I say. But rather, we see many, many benefits to increasing CO2.
The problem is, Greg, that the scientific facts don't line up with the agenda of the left to increase government control over every segment of our lives, which is really their goal. It's not saving the environment. It's expanding government control.
Yeah, it is. And what's incredible to me, as I've been doing research over the last, just new research has come out when we just talk about the greening of the earth and the benefits of carbon dioxide. It should be on the front page of the New York Times about how the earth is benefiting from this. But yet they're peddling this mantra of doom and gloom. These are the Ayatollahs of alarmism that are out there saying that the earth is on the edge of a climate apocalypse, where in fact, I see, and the facts and the science point us to an earth that's thriving, that's prospering, that's benefiting. And we see that through increased crop growth. And also throughout this transportation initiative, of course, they have all the catchwords, you know, environmental justice and economic justice. And, you know, they need to benefit all the placeholders in the community. But yeah, they've got these environmental left-wing buzzwords throughout this initiative. But what they want to do, here's one of the things they say, they want to create opportunities with markets for low-carbon technologies. And here's the key, including partnerships between government and private enterprise. Is that scary or what? I think we have enough partnerships between government and private enterprise, and they're going to be incentivizing private enterprise to develop these low-carbon technologies, where instead we should be allowing the free market to work and let that go. And what we've seen, Pennsylvania's leading the way through reductions in carbon dioxide emissions through the development of clean-burning natural gas, a reliable, low-cost energy source.
We are talking with Greg Wrightstone, who is author of the book, Inconvenient Facts. And Greg, we're well aware of the fact that the left is extremely good at putting lipstick on a pig, as it were, and giving nice-sounding names to things, to policy initiatives that actually are disastrous for the economy and for folks living here in Pennsylvania and around the nation. But as we look at this latest effort for them to add additional taxes on the gasoline that we all buy, on the fuel oil that we all use to heat our homes, they want to charge us more so they can give it to Philadelphia and Pittsburgh to run buses, which, as I recall, tend to belch exhaust. But setting that aside, this all, I would imagine, will have to end up before the legislature. They can't just raise taxes by regulation, can they?
A companion to this was a petition that was received by the state of Pennsylvania to the environmental regulators by the Clean Air Council. 2 weeks before this initiative we just talked about, this petition was received by the state of Pennsylvania. It appears that if they go forward with this, that that could be done as a non-legislative event, that it could just be imposed by the Environmental Equity Board or whatever the name of it is for the Pennsylvania, that they're empowered by the state constitution to provide clean air and water for the citizens, and this would just be part of it. That could be a really scary thing, and that petition was asking the state to impose a cap and trade, which again would be a carbon tax, and then redistribute it again. It's not clear how or who would get it, but you can rest assured it will be going to solar, wind, and bus systems in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. And again, just more onerous regulations and taxation on the citizens of the state.
Well, at least theoretically, were we still following the state constitution, which apparently we aren't. In the past year, we saw the state Supreme Court unconstitutionally re-gerrymander congressional districts. We saw the state Senate seat a state senator who didn't have the constitutional residency requirement. So that document apparently isn't being followed. But to the degree that we might still follow it at least a little bit, shouldn't all taxing and spending measures really have to? It's one thing for the governor and his administration to put regulations in effect, but to raise taxes on gasoline, that sounds to me like a place where Republicans in the legislature, and I think I'm talking particularly about the House because the Senate caves into everything, but at least Republicans in the House might stand up to something like this?
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. It should work that way. Now, I'm not a lawyer, and I've never even played one on the radio, but I've been reading up on this, and the people I've read, they're saying that this petition, if it goes through, it could be imposed in a non-legislative manner, that the environmental board could just say, we need to restrict this carbon dioxide pollution. It's harming the people of the state and the world, and we need to protect our citizens, and we're going to do this.
Greg, you are author of the book Inconvenient Facts. Tell us where folks can get that book. Also, you have a very important speaking engagement coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I've got, I'll be speaking up at Lewisburg on the 14th of January. We're expecting a large crowd there. You can learn more about it at my website. It's on the calendar there, inconvenientfacts.xyz, anywhere in the Lewisburg area. You will not be bored. You will be enthused and come away more knowledgeable about the subject matter. And so I encourage anyone in that northeast Pennsylvania area around Lewisburg, come on the 14th and learn more at my website, inconvenientfacts.xyz. Go to the calendar to find that out. And also, Loman, we have a smartphone app that we're rolling out here in a couple weeks that we think is, I'm really excited about. It's not available yet, but perhaps we can talk again when that is available.
We'll look forward to that. Look forward to have you speaking to the Susquehanna Valley Conservatives later in January. You can also go to their website to get information. Greg Wrightstone, author of Inconvenient Facts. Greg, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Loman.
Take a drive on the Pennsylvania Turnpike and you will be paying higher fares. And the governor is set to propose a new budget that likely will try and raise a number of other taxes. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have details on this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is Frank Gamrat. We like to wish our listeners, I'll do it on behalf of you, Frank, but
absolutely,
you can do it as well. A happy 2019, happy new year to our listeners, and we wish them all a wonderful and prosperous new year. Frank, as we know, as the calendar pages turn, the issues are by and large still the same. We have some things that we know that are coming in 2019. Mm-hmm. Let's start with one that you know is coming very, very soon in early January.
It is here.
And it is here. And that deals with transportation funding and the role of the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
Absolutely. As most people who travel the Turnpike know, the tolls have gone up yet again. I think this is the 9th or 10th straight year that we've had an increase in tolls on the mainline Turnpike and its spurs. And you know, people tend to forget, and this is sort of, I guess, why we're around, is to remind people, is way back in 2007, the governor at that time, Ed Rendell, and the legislature came up with this little formula to increase funding for road and bridge work, as well as mass transportation. And so their idea was to toll Interstate 80, take those proceeds and spend them on, you know, mass transit and road and bridge work. Well, of course, that's sort of a no-no. Federal government has this little rule that says if you're going to toll a federal highway, you have to spend that money back on that highway. So when the governor and the legislature submitted that proposal to the feds, they rejected it. Not once, not twice, but three times. And so the governor says, well, okay, here's what we'll do. We'll just raise the tolls on the turnpike and put that money onto road and bridge repair and mass transit. Turnpike was supposed to make a $900 million payment back in 2007 towards this. Once the tolling of I-80 was rejected, that money was reduced. That payment was reduced to $450 million, of which I think $250 went to roads and bridges and $200 of that went to mass transit. And of course, their response for that payment up till 2022, Act 89 of 2013 came along. And of course, that is the gasoline sales tax increase. It was oil stock and franchise tax. Governor Corbett put on, and that lessened the burden on the turnpike, but not until after 2022, where the payments will be reduced yet again. But again, you know, let's just get back to this whole notion of trying to toll and raise the tolls on the turnpike for road and bridge repair. Again, getting back to what I said earlier, the money has to be spent back on that toll road. And so it's not. It's being spent on road and bridge work and mass transit. And what ends up happening is the Truckers Association has now sued the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania for improper tolling. Now, this comes on the heels of the same Truckers Association suing the state of New York. The state of New York raise the tolls on their toll roads to help improve their canal system. And so once again, toll road money was not being used on the toll road, but used elsewhere. Those truckers won. So fresh off a victory in New York, they're coming after Pennsylvania. So one of the things we're going to be wanting to keep an eye on is what happens if and when the truckers win. Will they get the money back? Will the Turnpike Commission have to pay them back for tolls that were improperly assessed the first time around? And what does that do for the commuters that have been using that toll road? So there's a lot going on here with this turnpike, and the Turnpike Commission sort of caught in a no-win situation. When they first started this, they were all of $2 billion in debt back in 2004. In 2017, the last certified annual financial report, they're almost $13 billion in debt. So their debt load has just increased tremendously, along with the cost of using that road. Of course, they've got to pay their own expenses. And this is something that we're going to keep an eye on and we're going to be writing about very quickly. But this is a mess that was created because they're trying to fund mass transit. And of course, we've written a lot about the problems here at Port Authority in Allegheny County. They've got the second most expensive bus transit system in the country behind New York City. And instead of dealing with the root cause of all this stuff, transit union and the outrageous pay and the costs associated with operating this thing, they tried to paper it over. And here we are, 11, 12 years later, and now it's coming back to bite us.
Yeah, basically, I mean, that many years into it, and like you mentioned, if this lawsuit changes the time frame, because like you're saying, it looks like there's some end date in sight. Maybe when we pull up to the toll booth, they'll be handing us refunds, right, on a proportional basis. Let's talk about another change, Frank, that was coming, we know for sure, in 2019. It's actually already begun. If somebody's taken employment with the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania as a new hire, they'll be in a new pension system starting January 1st of this year, the state workers' pension system, and then starting later this year in July with the public school workers' system. New hires are going to be going into some sort of either a hybrid or a defined contribution pension plan. Now, again, we've got a lot of, sort of like with the turnpike, we are now paying for some earlier decision back in the early part of the OOs when there was a couple pension laws passed that basically enriched the pensions for a lot of people and stretched out the payments and kind of gave a payment holiday. And now here we are with school districts, yeah, Somebody has to pay for it, exactly. So we'll see that change coming as well. Let's talk lastly, Frank. Obviously, we're going to have a second term for the current governor.
Correct.
He will be sworn in here shortly this month. Mm-hmm. And then February We get back into budget season.
Oh, yeah.
And we know last year the budget was done before.
It was amazing due. What happens in an election year.
In an election year, the budget was done, I think it was June 25th or 26th. Mm-hmm. What can we expect this year, do you think? What could be proposed with the budget? And then specifically an issue you've worked on for a long time, the severance tax from the natural gas. Do you think that's going to come back as a proposal?
Oh, there's no question. I think this budget is going to be more contentious, probably a little reminiscent of his first couple of budgets. And like you said, he's going to trot out a severance tax once again. And he did this the first 3 out of 4 years. The reason it didn't come up last year, of course, re-election time, and he needed the votes. But again, it was something he ran on 4 years ago. He's going to put in a severance tax to pay for everything under the sun. There's this thought amongst these liberals that the natural gas extraction is going to pay for everything that they want. It's this endless source of revenue for them. And it's not. We do have this impact fee. And it's probably the worst named system out there because the impact fee gives you the idea that it's not a tax, but it is a tax. So they are paying. So he's going to bring it up again. Now, we know that the legislature is a little tighter than it was before. It's more normal with the number of Democrats in there, number of Republicans. But I still don't see any real traction coming through with any kind of severance tax. But he may go to the mat once again. He may feel a little more renewed that he was elected and doesn't have to worry about re-election. So we'll see. This could drag on for a while.
Well, if it does, you know where you can read all about it. You can visit the Allegheny Institute website, which is www.alleghenyinstitute.org. You can follow us on Twitter. Turnpike, pensions, the state budget, city budget, county budgets, school taxes. We'll be covering those topics and many more in 2019. And again, on behalf of Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi. We wish you a happy 2019. We look forward to having you visit our website. And we wish you the best. This has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
It has been 1 year since the Trump tax cuts have been put into place. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania looks at their success on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
It's been a year since Nancy Pelosi proclaimed that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, passed by Congress just before the start of 2018, was, quote, the end of the world. This Armageddon, she said, would be brought on by the passage of the worst bill in the history of the United States Congress. I will leave it to students of history to fight over which are the worst bills ever passed in U.S. history, but it's probably not the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. We can dismiss such hyperbole and overheated rhetoric as simply the political style of the presumptive Speaker of the House. But others made more concrete predictions about what would happen. And while less ridiculous, they were just as wrong. Case in point, Pelosi's fellow Californian, outgoing Governor Jerry Brown, who said proponents of tax reform were throwing a wrench into the engine of our economy. According to my colleague, Russ Latino, who serves as VP of Economic Opportunity for our network, politicians couldn't have been more wrong. Writing in an op-ed, he makes the case that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act has been good for our economy and for individuals. It's government spending that remains the problem. Says Russ, of course the law has jump-started our sluggish economy and improved lives across the country. The Nonpartisan Tax Foundation says that economic growth will be around 2% greater from 2018 to 2027 because of tax reform. This will boost the GDP by $5.3 trillion in increased wages by an additional 1.5% and create 340,000 more jobs. Claims by Senators Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Chris Van Hollen that the bill was highway robbery and a heist because benefits of tax reform would be enjoyed only by the wealthy have also been proven false. The bill cut taxes for the average American household in every state, including right here in Pennsylvania, providing a savings of $1,400 for individuals and $3,000 for married couples with two children. Over the next decade, that savings, coupled with higher wages, will amount to $26,000 for individuals and nearly $45,000 for married couples with a couple of kids. That's a college education, a down payment on a home, money to start a business or chase a dream. Of course, many politicians in Washington prefer to spend that hard-earned money as they see fit, rather than letting us keep it. So there was plenty of fretting that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act would dramatically expand the deficit to force huge future cuts to education, roads, health care, as Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut warned. Wrong again. The truth is, revenue isn't the problem. Spending is. From 1989 to 2018, revenue has grown at a compound annual rate of 2%. During the same period, spending has grown at 2.2%. Between 2014 and 2018, the difference was even greater. Revenue grew at 1.1% and spending at 2.6%. Revenue is going up. Spending is just going up more. Hardworking American families know that if you spend more than you take in, you'll end up in debt. The rules aren't very different for Washington. Rather than adding to the deficit, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is boosting the economy, growing the GDP, and in turn, increasing revenues across the country and right here in Pennsylvania. The Department of the Treasury reported that revenue collections in 2018 were $3.3 trillion. That's almost $14 billion more than in 2017. State revenue collections are also up, largely thanks to the growing economy. Now, if Washington can just start spending more responsibly, the debt will shrink. I agree with Ross and others who argue that it's government spending that needs our attention if we are to give the next generation a good footing. As we head into 2019 with a leadership change in the House of Representatives and a slate of new members of Congress from Pennsylvania, it's more important than ever that citizens keep an eye on how our lawmakers spend our dollars. Allowing citizens to keep more of the money they earn is good for the economy. Out of control government spending is not. Here's to working together for a more prosperous new year for Pennsylvanians and all Americans. I'm Beth Ann Mumford, State Director of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania. Join our effort at www.afppennsylvania.com.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WPHB-AM in Phillipsburg, WHKS-FM in Port Allegheny, along with WKQL-AM and FM in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. And it is time to begin talking about the annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. This year is the 30th anniversary Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, which will be held April 5th and 6th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Wall Street Journal columnist and commentator Kimberly Strassel. As usual, there will be numerous speakers, panel presentations on key state and national issues, workshops, and the opportunity to network with conservatives from across the state. To learn more and to register for the 2019 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, go to paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.